Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
Former President Bill Clinton is in a California hospital today. He's being treated for an infection, though doctors say he's improving. We'll keep an eye on that. And we'll train the other eye on D.C., where the investigation into the January 6th Capitol insurrection is getting tense. The House committee has subpoenaed former Trump aide Steve Bannon to appear. Bannon says he will not cooperate, and he could be held in contempt. Here's committee chair Congressman Benny Thompson on CNN yesterday.
We're left with no other choice than to ask the Justice Department, lock him up, and hold him in contempt. And clearly, that might send enough of a message that he will agree to talk to us.
Well, let's talk more about all of this with our Friday Politics Roundtable. We have with us Eugene Daniels. He's a White House correspondent for Politico. Welcome.
Hi there. Thanks so much for having me.
Yes. And Rick Klein is a director at ABC News. Welcome back, Rick.
Great to be with you.
Okay, let's start, Rick, with why the selection committee is so interested in Steve Bannon. He wasn't even working at the White House on January 6th.
No, but he was part of a network of Trump advisors who were involved in spreading the word around January 6th and is purported to have been in touch with President Trump during that day. And that circle of advisors was a pretty tight one. He had a lot of conversations that day, but it's really gets to the question of what President Trump was saying and doing in real time in the run-up to January 6th on January 6th itself. That's what the committee wants to get at, and that's why they're pressing this issue. They do not want to rest without pursuing every option to hear from Steve Bannon, even though it's very difficult to bring a legal proceeding against someone for failing to comply with a congressional subpoena. They think Steve Bannon knows exactly what the president was doing and thinking in real time. They want to hear from him.
Okay, more on that. Republican Congressman Adam Kinzinger, a longtime opponent of Trump, is on the selection committee, and here he is last night on CNN.
A criminal contempt referral is nothing, frankly, crazy. Doesn't happen as much with Congress. But it is, in essence, within our power, and it is the right thing to do. And again, anybody that gets subpoena in the future, look, all we want is the answer.
Eugene, if the committee approves criminal contempt charges against Bannon, what happens next?
What happens next is they also have to vote on this in the House. So this continues. This process isn't kind of one and done. And then from there, there's the possibility of actual legal proceedings in this process. And so there's a lot in this, whether or not there's going to be a referral to the Department of Justice, and then they will proceed. So this isn't a one and done. And this was something that the committee has been worried about, right? As soon as they started sending out subpoenas, they were concerned with anyone who would try to dodge and weave, because what that does is it makes the process work a lot longer. And they don't want that. They kind of want to get to the truth pretty quickly. And I will say, when it comes to Steve Bannon, one of the things that's interesting is he's kind of being used as an example here. Because one, the committee probably knows that, though, like Rick said, they think Steve Bannon knows what the president was doing that day. He's also not someone who is likely to give them a lot of information. We saw that during the Russian investigation when he was in the skiff with them and came with a printed document of 25 questions from the White House, and most of the answers said no. So he's not likely going to be a cooperative witness either way. So I think this is a way for the committee to say to everyone else, hey, when we say come, when we say give us documents, do that.
Now, Rick, let's talk a little bit about executive privilege here. Steve Bannon is claiming he's protected under former President Trump's executive privilege. The Biden administration is suggesting maybe not. I mean, how, for the rest of us, how does executive privilege work and how is it playing out here?
Well, the idea behind it is that a president should be able to get unvarnished advice and not have to share with Congress or any other entity what he's being told and what kind of what he's sharing in private. There's two issues here. One is that Steve Bannon had long since left the White House. In fact, he was fired by President Trump, I think, 3 years before the election, very unceremoniously. They then later would make up politically and were collaborating again, but he never came back to the employ of the White House. And the second is that the current executive is not the executive that we're talking about. President Trump is hoping that he keeps this executive privilege essentially in perpetuity. And that's where the Biden administration is not inclined to help out. It may set a dangerous precedent, particularly thinking if the Republicans take over Congress during the Biden years, that they may live to regret some of the legal positions they're taking here. But they're saying, look, this is no longer relevant for current decision making, and it's important for the national security interests of the country for Congress to learn these things. They're not going to stand in the way of Congress getting this. And in fact, they are not backing up that claim from President Trump and his lawyers.
Eugene, let's step back a little bit here at the stakes for this inquiry. Next year is a midterm election year, and the committee, I imagine, wants to report out its findings before then. I mean, it seems to be pretty aggressively trying to get information.
No, absolutely. This is not something they want to go well into the 2022 midterms. One, because you don't want to seem like anything's political, though they are focusing on the truth, though they are doing this, they say, for the darkest day, finding out what happened on the darkest day in our democracy in a very long time. You know, that is not how it's going to be played by the Republicans. And that matters in a midterm, right? You want to go in with as much ammunition as you can in order to win. And I think they want to make sure they get this information out quickly. And something that's also really important is there are polls that show the further out America gets from January 6th, the less people care. Right. Like that is how that happens a lot in America. When things happen, the further away from it, the less people are paying attention and care. And I think they're also worried about that as well.
Mm-hmm. OK, while we have you, let's talk about another big issue. Earlier this week, Congress only temporarily raised the debt ceiling. They'll have a deal with it. They'll have to deal with this again in December. So we can kind of think of it as crisis averted for now. But Biden has ambitious social spending agenda. Any indication that we're seeing movement there, Rick?
I think there's some hopeful signs that that all of these negotiations are coming to a head. They've certainly got more serious, but I think there's a big concern in Democratic circles that they're essentially grinding their wheels in place, that there hasn't been any motion on it. And in the meantime, these policies that are described in these bills are either not understood or being lampooned by Republicans and opponents. So they may not get the political payoff that they want out of this. I think there's real urgency here to try to at least come close to the deadline of the end of the month for these bills, as well as knowing that they've got to deal again with government funding and again with the debt ceiling. All of these crises are converging. And I think for a lot of Democrats, failing is not an option in their view. But they are concerned that they just have not gotten any closer, and they're going to have to make some very tough choices to get to the kind of numbers that the entire party would agree to.
Right. And they're negotiating this lower price tag of $3.5 trillion. Where are we on that particular point, on lowering the price tag there? Who wants what? Eugene.
You know, the number that we've been told from White House sources is it's probably going to end up in the $1.9 to $2.3 trillion range, right? That is a bit more than Joe Manchin said he wanted, which was 1.5. It's also lower than 3.5. It was always going to be lower than 3.5. I think everyone involved knew that. And right now, they don't have a top line number. They're kind of working with the idea that that's where they're going to land. But other than Joe Manchin, we haven't heard another top line number, like from Kyrsten Sinema of Arizona, also a key lawmaker in this process, about where they want it to be. They also have not fully discussed what's going to be in it. And I think that's something that, you know, obviously all of us can figure out. If you don't know what's going to be in it, how much money you want to spend on the care economy, for example, on healthcare, then you're not going to have a top line number. So they have a lot of work to do. It's really difficult to see how October 31st, which is the deadline set by the Speaker of the House to have this wrapped up, is going to happen with them, one, not being here and negotiating happening on the phone and through Zoom.
Now, Rick, I mean, this all goes to the Biden agenda, which is stalled here. And his poll numbers are not good. The index on 538.com says 45% of people approve his performance, 49% disapprove. Does Joe Biden have the ideas, the team, the political charisma to turn this around?
And these concepts are related, right? The part of the reason that the agenda is stalled is that the numbers have stalled. The idea behind Joe Biden pushing this and Democrats going along was that you had a relatively popular president pushing relatively popular policies. If either of those things is not true, it changes the political calculus, and it creates a kind of every man and woman for themselves dynamic that's now going on in Capitol Hill, where anyone can be the majority maker or the majority breaker. This is going to be a true challenge for Biden. He has tried to urge mostly from the sidelines. We know that next week he's going to be spending a lot of time working the phones, having the kind of meetings that he needs to have, making ultimately some tough choices, because so far he is he's doing his best to unite a party that's pretty divided. You know, they're still talking in public about why they disagree and how they disagree in a big way. The input from the president on this is going to be critical. There's no way they get to the finish line without him.
All right. And very quickly, Eugene, midterm year is coming up. Given these issues for Biden and the Democrats, how are things looking now?
They have raised more money than Republicans. Numbers came out yesterday, and that's what they're seeing. They're feeling hopeful, but there's obviously the historical wins that are in front of them, not behind their back. And so I think they're worried about that. They're worried that they don't have enough wins at this point. We're still, you know, ways out. But they need to make sure that they deliver some wins and that those things start to be implemented in the country. Mm-hmm. And so people can feel excited mm-hmm. about voting for them. And I think that's what they're hoping to do with these two bills. Yes.
All right. That is Eugene Daniels, White House correspondent for Politico, and Rick Klein, political director for ABC News. Thanks to you both, and have a great weekend.